This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Brett Kavanaugh is being grilled right now by Senator Dick Durbin, and so I want to go to that, and we'll take that video and audio right now. Here's Senator Durbin speaking.
She visited a religious anti-abortion crisis pregnancy center. She underwent an ultrasound for no medical purpose, and she went before a judge and obtained a judicial bypass of the state's parental consent requirements. In other words, this young woman complied with every legal requirement, including Texas state requirements, placed in front of her so she could move forward with her decision, a decision affecting her body and her life. Do you believe that this was an abortion on demand?
Senator, the Garza case involved first and foremost a minor. It's important to emphasize it was a minor.
Yes.
So she had been, and she's in an immigration facility in the United States. She's from another country. She does not speak English. She's by herself. If she had been an adult, she would have a right to obtain the abortion immediately. As a minor, the government argued that it was proper or appropriate to transfer her quickly first to an immigration sponsor. Who is an immigration sponsor, you ask? It is a family member or friend who she would not be forced to talk to, but she could consult with if she wanted about the decision facing her. So we had to analyze this first as a minor, and then for me, the first question always, what's the precedent? The precedent on point from the Supreme Court is there is no case on exact point, so you do what you do in all cases. You reason by analogy from the closest thing on point. What's the closest body of law on point? The parental consent decisions of the Supreme Court, where they've repeatedly upheld parental consent laws over the objection of dissenters who thought that's going to delay the procedure too long, up to several weeks. And I'm getting to the point.
Before you get to the point, you've just bypassed something. You just bypassed the judicial bypass, which she received from the state of Texas when it came to parental consent. That's already happened here,
but you're still stopping her. I'm not. The government is arguing that placing her with an immigration sponsor would allow her, if she wished, to consult with someone about the decision. That is not the purpose of the state bypass procedure. So I just want to be very clear about that.
But, Judge, the clock is ticking.
It is.
The clock is ticking. 20-week clock is ticking. She made the decision early in the pregnancy, and all that I've described to you and the judicial decisions, the clock is ticking. And you are suggesting that she should have waited to have a sponsor appointed who she may or may not have consulted in making this decision.
Again, I'm a judge. I'm not making the policy decision. My job is to decide whether that policy is consistent with law. What do? I look at precedent. And the most analogous precedent is the parental consent precedent. From Casey has this phrase at page 895, minors benefit from consultation about abortion. It's a quote talking about consultation with parents.
You are adding a requirement here beyond the state of Texas requirements that there be some sponsor chosen who may or may not be consulted for this decision.
So,
and the clock is ticking on her pregnancy.
Couple things there, Senator. You said you are adding. I'm not adding. I'm a judge. The policy is being made by others. I'm deciding whether the policy is then consistent with Supreme Court precedent. There are two things to look at in this context, Senator. First, is the government's goal reasonable in some way? And they say we want the minor to have the opportunity to consult about the abortion. Well, the Supreme Court precedent specifically says that that's an appropriate objective.
Was that a state requirement?
The second question is the delay, your point. And the parental consent cases of the Supreme Court recognize that there could be some delay because of the parental consent procedures. And in fact, Justices Marshall, Brennan, and Blackmun repeatedly dissented in cases because they thought the delay was too long. I quoted all that in my Garza opinion. And I made clear it had to happen very quickly, And I looked at the time of the pregnancy to make sure it, on safety. I specifically talk about safety. I specifically say the government cannot use this as a ruse to somehow prevent the abortion. I spent a paragraph talking about she was in an undeniably difficult situation. So as I was saying to Senator Graham earlier, I tried to recognize the real-world effects on her. I said, you know, consider the circumstances. She's a 17-year-old by herself in a foreign country, in a facility where she's detained, and she has no one to talk to, and she's pregnant. Now, that is a difficult situation, and I specifically recognized and tried to understand that. And then as a judge, not the policymaker, I tried to understand whether the government's policy was consistent with the Supreme Court's precedents, and I did the best I could. And I said on those parental consent precedents, I said, look, some people disagree with those precedents and think those kinds of statutes should not be allowed. But I had to, precedent's not like a cafeteria where I can take this but not that. I had to take Casey incompletely. Casey reaffirmed Roe.
I have some other questions, so okay. I ask if you please.
Well, it's an important question, though,
it's
and I want to make sure.
It's a critical question.
And I did my level best in an emergency posture. So I had basically 2 days to do this case.
It was a 2-1 unbanked decision, which you dissented from, correct?
I did the best to follow precedent. And as I always try to do, to be as careful as I can in following the precedent of the Supreme Court. So,
let me ask you a personal question. What's the dirtiest, hardest job you've ever had in your life?
I worked construction when I was summer after I was 16 for a summer, 7 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. My dad dropped me off every morning at 7. 6:55. He wanted me to be early, that's probably the one. I also, I should say, Senator, I had one person, I guess, is lawn business for many summers. Business, you know, I cut a lot of lawns, and that's how I made some cash. I started that probably 8th grade. Maybe 7th grade. I cut my parents' lawn, but then I cut a lot of lawns in the neighborhood and actually distributed flyers to all over the place to say, if you need your lawn cut, call me. So lawn cutting and then the construction job the one summer.
My dirtiest job I ever had was 4 summers working in a slaughterhouse.
Yes.
I always wanted to go back to college.
Yes.
I couldn't wait to get out of there. It was unbearable. It was dirty. It was hot. Things I did were unimaginable, and I wouldn't even start to repeat them. Then came a case before you called Agriprocessor Company versus NLRB. At least a third of the workers, Judge Kavanaugh, in our nation's slaughterhouses are immigrants. It stands visits to Iowa or Illinois, probably Delaware, you pick it. You're going to find a lot of immigrants doing these miserable, dirty, stinking, hot jobs. Many of them are undocumented. The work is low paid and dangerous. And as the GAO has noted, immigrants are pressured not to even report injuries on the job. Agriprocessors case was a notorious meatpacking company owned by Shalom Rabashkin, who was convicted of 86 counts of fraud and money laundering in 2009. His 27-year sentence recently was commuted by President Trump. Agriprocessors had at the core of its business model the exploitation of undocumented workers. Half their workers, almost 400 of them, were not authorized. Workers alleged the company fostered a hostile workplace environment that included 12-hour shifts without overtime pay, exposure to dangerous chemicals, sexual harassment, and child labor. A truck driver at Agriprocessors Brooklyn warehouse told reporters, quote, we were treated like garbage, and if we said anything, we got fired immediately. Judge Kavanaugh, you bent over backwards to take the company's side against these workers. In a 2008 D.C. Circuit case, Agriprocessor versus NLRB, your dissent argued that this company's workers should be prohibited from unionizing because they did not fit your definition of an employee. To reach this conclusion, you imported a definition of employee from a totally different statute. You ignored the plain language of the controlling statute, the National Labor Relations Act, which has a broad definition of employee, as well as binding Supreme Court precedent. The majority in this case, and you were a dissenter, the majority in this case noted that their opinion stuck to the text of the National Labor Relations Act and to the 1986 Immigration Reform and Control Act, which did not amend the National Labor Relations Act. They said that your dissent, these other judges said about your dissent, would, quote, abandon the text of the controlling statute and lead to a, quote, absurd result. The majority in this decision included one Republican and one Democratic appointed judge. Judge Kavanaugh, you claim over and over again to be a textualist, to be carefully weighing every word of a statute.
Yes.
So why did you go out of your way to interpret the word employee in a way that benefited this horrible business?
This is absolutely brilliant by Durbin.
Exploited workers.
Pay careful attention.
Why didn't you stick to the plain language of the controlling statute and the binding Supreme Court precedent?
Because the Supreme Court precedent compelled me to reach the result that I reached. And here's why, Senator. Let me explain. The Supreme Court had a case in 1984 called the Shertan decision. And the Shertan decision considered the interaction of the National Labor Relations Law Act and the immigration laws. And what the Supreme Court did in Shertan is had this question and said, it is at that time permissible to consider an immigrant unlawfully in the country as an employee under the National Labor Relations Act. And in part 2B of the opinion, you have to read part 2B of the opinion, of the Supreme Court's opinion. If you read part 2B of the opinion, the court then goes on to say, and because the immigration laws do not prohibit employment of people unlawfully in the country, and makes clear, the Supreme Court makes clear, this is when it's being considered in Congress in 84, it ends up in the 86 Act.
This is Kavanaugh trying to weasel out of why he was, he lost, actually. I mean, you know, his peers said, no, you're wrong, and ruled against him. But he's saying, oh, yes, I was right. You shan't unionize. You can't do that. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We're going to pick up some more of the hearing here, and we've got a lot of news of the day. I've got a long rant on this stuff, and we're going to pick up your calls, too, so stick around.
Meeting in there was actually reflected what had been going on in the Supreme Court, and it is quite clear from the oral argument they were aware that the immigration law was about to be changed, and they were aware of the interaction between the labor law and the immigration law. So I think I stand by what I wrote then, and I think I correctly analyzed part 2B. Now, Senator, if the Supreme Court's Shertan opinion had ended at part 2A, 100% would agree with you, and my decision would have been different.
Well, let me just say,
if you read part 2B, I think you see.
You said earlier today you don't get to pick and choose which Supreme Court precedent you follow. The majority in agriprocessors' case was following Supreme Court precedent. In the Shertan case, the Supreme Court, a 7-2 decision, said that undocumented immigrants are employees under the National Labor Relations Act. I quote, since undocumented aliens are not among the few groups of workers expressly exempted by Congress, they plainly come within the broad statutory definition of employee. That's a quote from the case.
But that's part 2A. You got to go to part 2B.
Well, let me hang on. Let me tell you some people who went to both parts and couldn't disagree with you more. Everyone else who looked at this question, the administrative law judge, the National Labor Relations Board, including Republican appointees, two appeals court judges, including one Republican appointee, followed the Supreme Court precedent and came to the opposite conclusion that you did. I understand you may have preferred the Shertan dissent, but you failed to follow Supreme Court precedent. This was a case where the National Labor Relations Act included those who were undocumented who could unionize to protect themselves in the workplace. You went out of your way to dissent all the way along and make sure they didn't, or in your view, not have that right, that they did not have that right to unionize.
I very respectfully disagree, Senator. And the reason I disagree is that the Supreme Court did say that the immigrant was covered under the definition of NLRA. If it ends there, I'm with you 100%. But then the Supreme Court goes on to say, And we consider also in resolving this question the conflict between the National Labor Relations Act and the immigration laws, and makes clear, as I read it, if the immigration laws had made employment of someone here in the country unlawfully illegal, then that would be prohibited in the case. And I went back, like I said, if you look at Justice, I quote the oral argument transcript from Shertan in my dissenting opinion. I have no agenda in any direction on the, I'm a judge, so I'm just trying to resolve the precedent.
Well, let me close by saying this. I'm just a judge, I just follow precedent. Gosh, we've heard that so often, and I hope it's the case, but we know that there's much more to your job than that.
I agree.
The fact that you were a dissenter and everyone else saw this the other way should give us pause when you say, I'm just following precedent.
Well, I respectfully, Senator, that opinion, I'm proud of that opinion because I think it carefully details the law in that case. I'm following the Supreme Court precedent. And to your point that other judges disagree, there was a case I had about 10 years ago or 8 years ago called Papagno. It was a case where I ruled in favor of a criminal defendant on a restitution matter. Every other court beforehand disagreed. I wrote the majority opinion with Judge Edwards and Judge Griffith. Every other court after us disagreed. Finally got to the Supreme Court this year in the Lagos case, and they agreed with our one opinion, the Papagno opinion. Just to point out that just because other courts of appeals might have disagreed does not necessarily mean we were necessarily wrong.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And now we're back to Republicans providing Mr. Kavanaugh with his daily tongue bath. So we will just, I want to share my rant with you, and then we will pick up your phone calls here. I want you to think about this scenario, all right? And I just want to ask you, does this sound crazy to you? I walk into a 7-Eleven and I rob them. I walk out with $74 in cash and a case of Coke. I get arrested in the parking lot. They drag me off to jail. The next day I'm in court and the judge says, well, you know, what do you have to say for yourself, Mr. Hartman? And I say, there is no mention of 7-Elevens in the law. You cannot prosecute me. There are laws against robbing pharmacies, very specific laws against robbing banks, but there's not a specific law against robbing a 7-Eleven. So you have to let me go. Now, it sounds crazy, right? I mean, just like certifiably crazy. But here is the reality. This morning, in the hearings with Brett Kavanaugh, when Orrin Hatch started talking about the Chevron deference. That's what they were talking about. The billionaires who own big oil companies and big coal companies are very bent out of shape about the fact that the EPA has the power to regulate them. And back in 1984, when Neil Gorsuch's mother, Ann Gorsuch, was was the administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency, she argued that under the Clean Air Act, the EPA could not block mercury coming out of coal-fired power plants because the word mercury did not appear in the law. Now, this went to the Supreme Court. The case was called Chevron versus NRDC. And the Supreme Court ruled, no, if the enabling law that created the EPA and the, you know, it doesn't have to say mercury. All it has to say is, your job is to keep the environment clean, and then the EPA brings in experts, and they decide what's dangerous and what's not, and they've identified mercury, and so mercury is illegal. That's the state of the law right now. Right now, a judge would say, no, you robbed a 7-Eleven. That's robbery, even though it doesn't mention 7-Eleven. But what Orrin Hatch said this morning is that he and his Republican colleagues are preparing legislation to overturn that Chevron decision, so that the EPA can no longer regulate something unless Congress specifically names that thing. Which, of course, would be impossible. I mean, there's 80,000 chemicals out there, right? This is how bizarre it's getting. We'll pick up this thread right after the break.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
It's 27 and a half minutes past the hour. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Republican activist Brett Kavanaugh, who's also been a judge for 12 years, used to be a Republican activist with the Bush administration. And before that, he helped get George Bush into the White House. He and John Roberts advised Ted Olson on how to argue before Mr. Rehnquist and before the Supreme Court in order to stop the recount in Florida in 2000, in December of 2000. And Rehnquist did what they said. And George W. Bush paid off John Roberts for that. And now Donald Trump is paying off Brett Kavanaugh for that, in my humble opinion. I was telling you about the Chevron deference before, and I just want to finish that thought, and then I'm going to pick up your phone calls. In the Chevron case, basically what the court said was, the Supreme Court said was, of course, if you have legislation that says we're going to create the Environmental Protection Agency, that the mandate of the Environmental Protection Agency is to protect the environment, we are Congress. We're not going to sit here for 2 years with thousands of hearings over hundreds and hundreds or thousands of hours listening to experts decide which of the 80,000 chemicals in our environment are the dangerous ones that need to be regulated and which ones are the benign ones. That's not our job. Our job is to say, EPA, protect the environment, and then give you guys a budget. And you go out and you bring in the experts, or you hire the experts, and you decide based on you know, the parameters of the law. You decide what regulations are appropriate, what are inappropriate, and what the penalties should be for violating those regulations. And those will be subject to oversight of the courts, but only if they fall into a couple of simple categories, which is the EPA actually behaving, you know, consistent with the law? Are they behaving in good faith? If so, we leave them alone. Or are they behaving in a way that is patently absurd? You know, that is ignoring the law or even violating the law, in which case we intervene. So Neil Gorsuch's mother, when she was running the EPA and she ended up resigning in disgrace from the EPA, it was a scandal. She argued that unless the law specifically names a chemical that the EPA has the authority to regulate, they no longer have the authority to regulate that chemical. In this case, it was mercury. The Supreme Court said, no, the law does not have to name the chemical. The law has to name the goal of the agency. Orrin Hatch this morning, in his questioning of Brett Kavanaugh, pointed out that he and several of his colleagues, his Republican colleagues in the United States Senate, who are heavily funded by Koch Industries or the Koch brothers or ExxonMobil or other, you know, heavy-duty polluters, coal companies. And by the way, this doesn't just apply to the environment. This will get extended if Orrin Hatch has his way. This will get extended to the regulation of banks, to the regulation of hospitals, to the regulation of pharmaceuticals, to the regulation of our food supply. Every area where our government is currently protecting us, and some billionaire can make a little more money by hurting us, they are going to try to take down that protection. And what Orrin Hatch said to Brett Kavanaugh this morning is that a bunch of other Republicans are preparing legislation to blow up the Chevron. He called it the Chevron doctrine. It's typically referred to as the deference. In other words, we defer to the regulatory agency, to their judgment. It's not the job of the court to make these decisions. It's the job of the EPA to decide what is and what isn't dangerous in the environment. And Orrin Hatch said, we're going to blow that sucker up. I mean, obviously not his words, but essentially. And Brett Kavanaugh just sort of nodded and went along with it. And nobody said, what? What the hell? This is exactly the case of my walking into a 7-Eleven and saying, you know, give me all your money. And then going into court and saying, you know, the law does not say you may not rob a 7-Eleven. It says you can't rob banks. There's a lot of retail outlets out there that have the word bank in their name. Wells Fargo Bank, Bank of America. I can't rob them. And there's a specific law about robbing pharmacies. And there's all kinds of companies out there. Johnson's Pharmacy, Smith's Pharmacy, Acme Pharmacy, Chicago Pharmacy. You can't rob them. But the law does not say I may not rob a 7-Eleven. And therefore, I'm robbing the 7-Eleven. As bizarre as that logic is, that's the logic that the Koch brothers and the other billionaires want applied to environmental and other laws. The other one is the mens rea thing. I mentioned this at the end of my conversation with Congressman Pocan. Mens rea means state of mind. And the so-called criminal justice reform that the Koch brothers and other right-wing billionaires are promoting, and the major corporations are supportive of, is legislation that would require, in cases of white-collar crime, that the state of mind of the person being charged be taken into consideration. Now, certainly, state of mind has a place, right? For example, you know, if somebody hits somebody with their car and kills them, that's manslaughter. But if they do it maliciously, if they do it intentionally, hit somebody with their car and kill them, that's murder. I mean, state of mind has something to do with it. So there's a basis for mens rea, right? I mean, it makes sense at the state of mind. But what they're trying to do is they're trying to say that if the CEO of a company says to the senior management and then down the line to management, you know, those safety devices that we have on the machines on the factory floor, we just can't afford those anymore. We're spending, you know, $20 million a year on safety devices. We're just going to do away with them. And as soon as they're done away with, Joe Blow dies on the assembly line, gets his hands chopped off and bleeds out on the floor. You would have to, in order to prosecute the person who got rid of the safety equipment, you would have to prove that their intent was to kill Joe Blow. Otherwise, you can't prosecute them. Now, if, you know, I would say that that's negligence, if nothing else, but no. They want to blow up the negligence defense. Now, they don't want to do this with regard to things like you're driving down the street and you're texting and you hit somebody and, you know, you should have known better, right? They, for regular criminals, no problem. Throw them in jail. But for people running companies, if they make decisions that poison people, that kill people, that injure people, that ruin people's lives, you have to prove that that was their goal. That when that banker decided that he was going to sell these crappy subprime mortgages, it was his intention to have all those people end up homeless. And of course, you could never prove that. What, are they going to put it on a billboard, write a letter? In most cases, that's not even their intention. I mean, if they gave it any thought, they would know that that would be the consequence of their action, but it's not their intention. Their intention is to increase profits. And so these two things, blowing up the Chevron deference and building mens rea into white-collar criminal law, this is the wet dream of the billionaire class right now. To essentially completely neuter the Environmental Protection Agency, the Securities and Exchange Commission, the banking oversight agencies, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, all of these agencies get, the Food and Drug Administration, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, they all get neutered if you do away with the Chevron deference. And the ability to hold billionaires and CEOs to account when the actions that they take cause destruction of lives or property or anything, the environment, they want a get-out-of-jail-free card. And this guy, Brett Kavanaugh, is going to be eager to give it to them. So, anyhow, my rant here. And, Chuck in Indianapolis, it says here you disagree with me. How so?
Well, Tom, respectfully, you bring up how Kavanaugh was a Republican activist. Well, I just want to know, and I'll back off after this, is how is that any different than when Sotomayor was up for confirmation? They asked her the same things. Is it different?
Ask her what same thing?
If she was a part of the progressive, and I don't remember the specific words, but she was very much active in the Democrat Party. So
there is no such thing as the Democrat Party.
You can't have an activist.
Chuck, there's no such thing as a Democrat Party. I know the Joe McCarthy back in 1948 said that you always have to call it the Democrat Party and emphasize rat because that, you know, you don't want it to sound democratic. But the name that Thomas Jefferson gave it was the Democratic Party.
Instead of answering the gist of the question.
No, I'll get to the answer to your question, but what you do when you use that kind of language is you reveal that you're just interested in promoting Republican talking points rather than talking about the actual issue. Yes, you're right. Sonia Sotomayor was well known as a progressive, as was Elena Kagan. And Kavanaugh and Gorsuch are well known as conservatives. My point was, and thank you for calling and giving me an opportunity to make it, my point was that when Kavanaugh was a Republican activist, he was working inside the Bush administration, helping make decisions, which he is now denying, but the documentary evidence supports what little of it we've seen, because the Bush White House is, or the lawyer, this is not even actually an official request from the Trump White House, but you know, this lawyer is saying, no, you can't look at hundreds of thousands of documents from when Kavanaugh, 35 months, black hole, when Kavanaugh was in the White House. But he was overseeing the torture of people. He was overseeing the illegal wiretapping of people like you. He was, you know, he was participating in these decisions. An illegal war? That goes way beyond anything Sotomayor ever did, in my opinion.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
In 4 minutes, we'll be checking in with Ellen Ratner with Talk Media News. And welcome back. Let's see here. Eleanor in Champaign, Illinois, watching us on Free Speech TV. Hey, Eleanor, what's on your mind?
Oh, hi, Tom.
Hi, Eleanor.
What's on my mind relates to possibly Kavanaugh and also the anti-abortion people. I used to be a social worker. I have had cases that people need to take care of who believe in anti-abortion. Number one, a gonorrhea pregnancy, which resulted in a baby that couldn't see, couldn't hear, had no muscle control, and just lays in residential care. Mm. And number two, a child is painfully addicted when they're born. Number three, I had a case where the father raped a developmentally disabled daughter. The daughter grew up, resented her mother, raped her, and beat her with her boyfriend. Let them take care of these people.
Yeah.
And see what they go through, these children.
Well, somebody called into the show a little bit ago. Louise was telling me this story, and he says, boy, I'm sure I'm glad that Brett Kavanaugh is going to save all those babies. And my response would be, they're not interested in saving babies. They're interested in saving fetuses. Once they become babies, once they're born, it's to hell with them. We have the highest childhood mortality rate and maternal mortality rate in the developed world because of Republican policies.
Right. And they need to understand that some babies are born that will not be able to function.
Yes. And may live terrible, lives in terrible pain.
That's right. Live terrible lives.
Yeah. Amen. Thank you, Eleanor. Very, very well said. Tank in Georgia, watching us on YouTube. Hey, Tank, what's up? Oh, Tank, you don't want to do that. This is the problem. You know, people hit the put it on the air anyhow, I don't have any other nonprofit callers right now. So, but to the Chevron deference, I notice I do have a caller who's listening on Sirius XM. I'll pick up after the top of the hour. Brent in Columbus, who says who wants to talk about the Chevron issue. I'm really looking forward to that at the top of the hour. I encourage you to Google Kavanaugh and environment. Just those two words, Kavanaugh with a K, environment. And what you will find is that on numerous cases, Brett Kavanaugh has ruled against the environment. And on several of these cases, he's tried to blow up the Chevron deference. And he's been overruled by his colleagues. As Dick Durbin was pointing out, he was overruled by his colleagues when he tried to end the ability of workers to have a union because some of them were not U.S. citizens. Which, you know, what does that have to do with the National Labor Relations Act? It doesn't say if a citizen, you know, works in a, you know, it just doesn't. But Kavanaugh is not just a judge. He is, as I said earlier, a Republican activist. He is interested in destroying unions, not because he thinks unions are a bad thing, but because unions typically fund Democratic candidates. He's interested in destroying the environment, not because he wants his kids to grow up in a world that's poisoned and polluted, but because the Republican Party takes money from big oil companies and big coal companies. I mean, it's just, you have to understand what's feeding the Republican Party, and then you get all of this. We'll be right back. What's this, Louise? Minutes before the hour, let's check in with Talk Media News and find out what's going on in the world. This report brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com and Ellen Ratner's new book, Loving What You Do, which I do. I love what I do, and one of the parts I love the most about it is talking to Ellen Ratner every week. Ellen,
well,
welcome back.
I love talking to you.
Thank
and
you.
I love talking to your wife, Louise, too. Okay, so the president tweeted on the Woodward book. It's very interesting because the book's name is Fear, and it's supposed to be out on the 11th. Now, why anybody would have a book out on 9/11, I don't know, but they did. Anyway, the president tweeted that it was filled with lies. It's interesting. Sarah Huckabee Sanders yesterday talked about it, but she talked about it in terms of the disgruntled employees. She did not say that Woodward was not telling the truth in terms of what he heard. So I think that that's very, very interesting. But he then said, libel. Should they change the libel laws? I mean, give me a break.
Yeah, well, the libel laws, the libel laws operate within the confines of the First Amendment. He's familiar with UK law, and he's probably even been involved in libel lawsuits in the UK. I'd be amazed if he wasn't, given that he's had over, what, 2,500 lawsuits in his life. And
right.
The United Kingdom does not have a First Amendment. There's no guarantee of free speech there. If you want to have free speech, you got to go stand in a corner in a park. And
right.
You know, Speaker's Corner.
Right.
So therefore, their libel laws are quite different than ours. So he is calling to end the First Amendment. Is that the deal?
Well, I don't know. I mean, he questioned whether they should change libel laws.
Yeah.
That was the end of his.
I think that just betrays an absolute lack of.
Wants to do.
Yeah, he's just totally ignorant of the Constitution and the law and the founding arguments around that. Anyhow, Ellen, what else is up?
Okay, so then there was the Kavanaugh hearings this morning. This is the second day, and every senator is given 30 minutes. So one interesting piece is that Senator Leahy of Vermont said, Trump claims he has an absolute right to pardon himself. Does he? Kavanaugh answers the question of self-pardons is something I've never analyzed. Yes, okay. It's a question I have not written about. It's a question, therefore, that is hypothetical question that I can't begin to answer in the context of a sitting judge and a nominee to the Supreme Court, Senator Leahy. And the other half of that is an obvious one. Does the president have the ability to pardon somebody in exchange for a promise from that person they wouldn't testify against him? Kavanaugh, sir, I'm not going to answer hypothetical questions of that sort. I mean, you can't make this stuff up.
Yeah. This is a hypothetical question, sort of like, you know, is it an okay thing to drive down the street and hit people with your car versus, you know, carefully trying to avoid them? Oh, well, you know, I'm not going to talk about it. I mean, this is, on its face, he should have said, well, of course, presidents can't pardon themselves and they can't pardon people in exchange. They can't commit a crime in exchange for a pardon.
Of course, but he didn't say that.
That's incredible.
He avoided it.
That's incredible.
All right. So the president today also tweeted about the economy and how good it was, and that he wants to pass the farm bill with snap work requirements, and everybody agrees his administration has done more in less than 2 years than any other administration in terms of jobs. That's what he tweeted out today. Okay, then the president, there's some hints about who he may be looking at for replacements to the White House counsel. Now, it's very interesting that both of the names are people, Emmett Flood, who is on Trump's legal team and was involved in the 1998-1999 impeachment process of Clinton. So he's looking clearly for White House counsels that can be involved in impeachment. I mean, I think there's no question about that.
So Trump is getting ready.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay. Now, the Chicago mayor, Rahm Emanuel, who was chief of staff under Clinton, he is not seeking a third term. Now, those of us that know Rahm Emanuel know that this guy is one of the most wily politicians around, and trust me, he would run for a third term if he thought he could win. But there's the shootings that are going on. There is the sex questions about what's happening in the Chicago school system, and he has not been able to do anything about it. And so my guess is that he is not going to be seeking a third term because he's looked at the polls.
I think there's a larger issue.
He can't win.
I think the larger issue is, and we saw this in the race in Massachusetts yesterday, even though it was a progressive against a progressive, there is a strong desire on the part of the Democratic base to repudiate the old and bring in the new. And
well, that's absolutely true as well, yes.
And to repudiate the Bill Clinton DLC corporate Democrats, which Rahm Emanuel is Exhibit A of.
Oh, he is Exhibit A plus of it. Absolutely. You're absolutely right. And you, of course, as usual, are the brilliant one in this family. Okay.
Thank you.
Now, this is really interesting. At Ground Zero, which, of course, happened in 2001, there were lots of people that helped. 15 men who were in the area of Ground Zero for an extended period of time had been diagnosed with breast cancer. That's men with breast cancer, stage 3 breast cancer, and in one case that's gone on to stage 4. But that's really unbelievable. And I know somebody that's working on the heart situation of people who were at Ground Zero, but this is very new in terms of the breast cancer diagnosis.
Wouldn't it be fascinating if they could identify the pathogen, or whatever the appropriate word is, the thing that caused that, and it could be a scientific breakthrough?
Right. Well, that would be very interesting. Okay. As you acknowledged earlier today or earlier on this show, the Massachusetts had a primary and they voted a progressive against somebody who had been in office for 10 terms, which is 20 years. And she would be the first African American to represent Massachusetts, a district in Massachusetts. Also, they decided on who would go against the sitting U.S. Senator. And it's going to be somebody on the Republican side who was a Trump person. He co-chaired the Trump campaign in Massachusetts. So that's who's going to be going against Elizabeth Warren.
That's interesting.
Okay. Today, the United Kingdom Prime Minister, May, went after the Russian poisonings, and she basically said that the Russians came on a plane, they did their work, there was poison found in their hotel room. They then left on a plane, and of course, Russia won't extradite its people.
Fascinating. Ellen Ratner with Talk Media News. Thank you, Ellen.
Thank you.
Great talking with you. We'll be back with more coverage of the hearings of Brett Kavanaugh, a Republican activist who wants to be on the Supreme Court, in just a moment. It's 57 minutes past the hour. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.